I don't care what your mama don't lie, gonna pick this banjo anyhow. Mama don't lie, no banjo picking him.
Mance Lipscomb from Arhuli 1001, Mama Don't Allow. And joining me is Arhuli's founding papa, if you will, Chris Strachwitz. Welcome to the Saturday Cafe.
Well, thanks for having me, and hope the listeners will enjoy some of this music.
What sparked your interest in American music? Because after all, you were born in Silesia, and what was Germany at the time, came over to the U.S. as a teenager. And, you know, why folk music and American music at that?
Well, it started really basically there at that school I went to, high school, beginning in 1947 and until 51, spent my 4 years in high school. And I listened to the radio. That was my real source of joy to the amazing outside American world. And we would get totally clear, of course, XERB, which was a 50,000-watt station from Baja, California. They were actually located the transmitter in Rosarito Beach, which is south of Tijuana. And at that time, Mexican music was not a viable commercial entity, but hillbilly music was, and they were playing hillbilly music all day long. Later on, I found out that these were 15-minute programs, all sponsored by the four-star label, which had people like the Maddox Brothers and Rose and T-Texas Tyler, Floyd and Lloyd, the Armstrong Twins, and a whole host of other wonderful country musicians. And, of course, other country artists appeared. They were playing records by Bob Wills and by Bill Boyd and his Cowboy Ramblers and just all kinds of wonderful stuff. I totally fell in love with hillbilly music. And then I went to a movie one day with a good friend of mine, Bill Mellon, and it was called New Orleans, and it featured the whole Kid Ory band with Louis Armstrong fronting it on trumpet, as well as Billie Holiday and Meadlux Lewis, and it just blew me away. I asked my friend, you know, going back to the school afterwards, what was that music we heard? And he said, that's New Orleans jazz. And so from then on, I tried to find every record by Bunk Johnson and Kid Ory and so forth. It was just an amazing, amazing ear-opener to me. And so jazz and hillbilly music were really the first ones.
How did you slide over into blues then? Because you recorded a lot of blues on the early Arhuli.
Yes, sides. Yes, indeed. I guess that was kind of a... partially, it became very popular just about when I went to Pomona College in 51... Hunter Hancock, he was one of the early DJs in the L.A. area that had a two-hour program featuring, it was known as rhythm and blues at the time, or sepia music. And he started playing really low-down blues about that time, you know, including all the trumpet records like Sonny Boy Williams and then Howling Wolf and Lightning Hopkins and John Lee Hooker and all that stuff, intermingled, of course, with vocal groups and what we called honking bands, which were very, very popular at the time, like Big J. McNeely and Joe Houston and similar saxophonists.
They were
our Grateful Dead of that time. But it was rhythm, man. It was just powerful, and I think that's what really caught me. And, of course, the blues, they, again, were very rhythmic, most of them, including Lightning Hopkins in his way, yet I was totally enamored by the way he sang, you know, hello, Central, please give me 209. I want to talk to my baby. She's way on down the line. The buses don't stop running. Trains don't allow me to ride no more. I mean, and I'd never heard poetry like that either, you know. It was just, obviously it came from another world that I had no knowledge of. Dang, that was good music. And it was crossing over, you see, because the radio was so democratic.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time that, at least in a big city like Los Angeles, you know, where you could hear this kind of music on a station like KFVD, it just would go into every home or house or room that had a radio that could tune it in.
I first became aware of Arhuli music with a different crossover. I think you were the label that introduced Cajun and Creole music to the wider world.
Yeah, that I guess my interest in Cajun music started, I guess, with the Harry Smith collection, but then, you know, there was a couple of things on it that sounded just so weird, like Joe Falcone's Longs à Lafayette. And then my friend Bob Pinson, Bob Pinson, he was living near where I was teaching school by the 60s, you know, by 1959 when I started teaching high school in Los Gatos. And he would play records for me, and he played one by the Hackberry Ramblers. And I loved the way that fiddler played.
Mm-hmm.
And it said down below, fiddle by Lutter and Darbone. And so when I got to Louisiana, not the first year, must have been the second or third time around, just before you get to Lake Charles, it said Hackberry, turn off to the south. So I went to Hackberry, a little dinky town just south of the highway, and there was just one cafe there, and asked the waitress, you know, where could I find the Hackberry Ramblers? He said, well, that's Lutter and Darbone. He lives right back where you just came from. Go back to Sulphur and just go north on the same highway and turn right on Darbone Street, and it's the third house on the right. And that's how I met Lutter and Darbone. The Hackberry Ramblers, and recorded him that same summer, and in his house. And well, from there it went. I guess I heard my live band down there, and then I happened to come through Eunice once and heard this amazing radio broadcast. And it was probably too long a story, but it was just everywhere. But but you couldn't really, it wasn't announced anywhere, you know, unless you happened to catch, well, I might as well tell you the first time I heard a live band was, I was driving into Lafayette on the old Highway 90. There was no I-10 yet back in those days. And I came into Lafayette on 90 and stopped at a service station and asked this fellow, you know, who was filling my gas tank, which is what they were doing still at that time, do you know, was any Cajun music by any chance? He said, no, I don't know anything about that stuff, but you can go to Four Corners. There's a lot of bars there. You can ask about it. And so I went to Four Corners where a bunch of roads come together, and there was a bar, and went in there, and it was a really attractive girl behind the bar, and I ordered a beer and finally got up the nerve and asked her, listen, have you ever heard of Cajun music? And she started laughing like hell and said, yeah, just last night me and my boyfriend got drunk and we danced our ass off out at the Midway Club. You can't miss it, man. It's on the highway to Bro Bridge on the left-hand side, big white dance hall. And I thanked her and I went there, and sure enough, there was this band playing with one of the singers singing the song that I really loved called It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels. One of them sang it in English, and the other one sang it in this weird patois. That was my first live Cajun band I ever heard. I think that was on the first trip through there in 1960. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think we should hear some Cajun music now. I've got something from Eunice picked out to play. This is the Savoie Family Band, La Pendance Sonique, on the Saturday Café. Savoie Family Band, that's happy like a rabbit in its nest, and that's how happy we are to have Chris Strachwitz of Arhuli Records with us today on the cafe. What Arhuli did for Cajun music in the 70s, you kind of did for Mexican American music in the 80s. What attracted you to the conjunto or norteña music?
Well, I guess even already in high school when I was there near Santa Barbara, there was a little station in Santa Paula. In the afternoons, I guess, they had regional Mexican music on there. I mean, it wasn't called it was just called Mexican music. And I remember it was mostly mariachis, you know, but with vocal duets fronting them or soloists. And but they were also playing accordion music. And now thinking back, it was probably Santiago Jimenez because his stuff was really widely distributed. And I just loved the sound of it, but it didn't really dare to follow it too much like I did blues, you know, until, well, I remember on one trip to L.A., I stopped off of Broadway there at a bar, and they had a live conjunto there. They were on the one side of the bar, and there was a dance floor sort of in between, and then the bar was on the right. And it was just great, great music. I just loved the rhythm. Again, it's the rhythm, I think, that attracted me, and the sound and the voices were just, these duet vocals, they were just like hillbilly. It was just like country music, you know. And I just fell in love with that stuff. And then every time I drove through, you know, like from El Paso, you would hear the stations from Juarez across the way, you know, it was all Mexican music by then, by that time. By the 60s, it had become a viable music, and there were plenty of records out there and stations playing it. You know, it wasn't like in the early 50s when there was really hardly anybody playing that music. And then driving through San Antonio, my God, that's on the west side. You could just drive down Zazamora Street and literally from one end to the other and hear at least 20 conjuntos come blaring out of the open doors in the summertime. You know.
Well, you actually recorded the son of Santiago Jimenez, and he appears on your celebration CD, Santiago Jimenez Jr. So we should hear something from San Antonio by him, I think. Ay Te Dejo en San Antonio.
Yeah, that was a composition by his father, Santiago Sr.
Santiago Jimenez Jr. on They All Played For Us, a wonderful 4-CD compilation set and coffee table book documenting one heck of a party. Tell us about the Arjuli Records 50th anniversary party.
It was an absolutely extraordinary series of concerts that were a benefit for the Arjuli Foundation, and I think we made actually about over $50,000 of profit from those concerts that went to the foundation. Now, if the book sells and breaks even, makes some money, then it's going to go. The musicians are going to get their share of royalties and so forth. It all kind of started, I guess. You know, I always thought it was nice to have a celebration, and all of a sudden we decided to make it a big one. And then we had these. By this time, I had known that Ry Cooter was really a good friend of Arjuli, and so was Taj Mahal. And so they said, listen, why don't you try and invite them all and see if we can get some of the bigger names to join us, and they did. And that was definitely like Ry Cooter filled the hall the first Friday night. It was sold out. But we had all these other wonderful people who, most of them had made recordings for Arjuli, but not all of them. Not all of them, but it just somehow came together. And then Laurie Lewis, in her amazing talent, she programmed it really tightly. So everybody, I think, had 20 minutes, and she made really sure it was happening that way. And then we called Nick Spitzer, old friend of mine. He now lives in New Orleans. And he was just a great MC because they knew they wouldn't want me to be the MC because I've been that before. I talk too much.
Oh no! Say it isn't so.
I never quit. it would have been a 50-hour program. Let me talk. anyway, this all came together just really, really nicely, and Fantasy Studios volunteered to do the recording, and I can't thank all the people enough right now, but it was mainly all the wonderful musicians who came and helped out. There was one kind of real surprise, because that's the Tremé Brass Band from New Orleans, because I had encountered, I'd met a wonderful gentleman not long before those concerts. He was introduced to me by a professor from UNC in North Carolina. And he was known to me as being a fairly well-to-do gentleman. And, you know, I talked about this up-and-coming program, and he said, well, is there anything I can do to help? And I said, you know, I would love to bring the Tremé Brass Band from New Orleans, but I can't ask them to play for nothing. That just isn't in the cards. Everybody else played for nothing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, well, just would you please ask them how much they want to come out here? And I did, and he paid for the whole noodle. And he's an anonymous patron, and he paid their airplane and their fee and everything else.
And because of him, you got to have an actual New Orleans parade right through
Correct.
Downtown. To this.
Yeah, I don't think Berkeley had ever seen anything quite like it. It was great.
Oh, I wish I would have been there. The photos, in particular, there's a small child just fascinated by the instruments in one of the pictures.
Yeah, those are wonderful photographs by Mike Melnick. That's what also really helped us kick the whole thing into gear, the fact that he took these marvelous pictures. And he was our official photographer, but you never know how things turn out until you see him, you know, and all of a sudden, boy, we're confronted by these gorgeous photographs.
Well, it's a wonderful book and a wonderful project, and the music is just stunning. Thank you very much for joining me on the Saturday Cafe today. It's really great talking with you.
Yeah, well, you're more than welcome.
I think we should leave with the traditional last encore of virtually every folk concert. Tell us a little bit about this version of Goodnight Irene.
Oh, well, that's why the Reuters agency has sent out this. The only picture that I really felt needed explanation where I pointed at somebody. I looked like a dictator or something. And the censontes are looking at me astonished. Anyway, that happened because the Goodnight Irene song, they were singing it, you know, they were carrying it on, the first verses, and I heard them sing about, I'm going to see you in my dreams. And I said, that isn't the way Lead Belly sang it. He said, I get you in my dreams. And so I went up to the stage there. Listen, we got to sing this right, you guys. Forget about this, I see you in my dreams. I get you. There's a hell of a lot of difference between I see you and I get you.
Indeed. Well, Chris Strachwitz, I'm glad that we got you on the radio today. Congratulations on 50-plus years at our Hooli, and wishing many, many more.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sometimes I live in the country. Sometimes I live in the town. Sometimes I get a great notion to jump in.